Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia. From Boots to Biz Radio, sharing helpful information and practical insight about the franchise industry for the military veteran entrepreneur. Now, here's your host, Bill Williams.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to From Boots to Biz Radio. And Kevin Finn, my wingman's over here. How you doing, Kev?
I'm doing great. I actually made it to the city championship in tennis this weekend, so that's what I'll be doing.
As a spectator or participant? As
actually participant, believe it or not.
Very good. Very good. Well, it's that time of year, you know, we can get out there and have a lot of fun in the outdoors. And
hit the ball around.
Yeah. I'm going to have to find my golf clubs one of these days, so... Well, today I'm very pleased that we've got a program. It's a little different take than talking about entrepreneurship, but that's we're talking about veterans and helping veterans, and particularly veterans with PTSD and impact on families. And we've got Dennis Brown with us. It's integral part of that organization. Dennis is a 30-year Army veteran, retired as a Colonel 06, and. Afghanistan veteran. So thank you for all that, Dennis, and welcome today.
Well, Bill, yeah, thank you. Honored to be here. Always talk about the Warrior to Citizen program.
Yeah.
It's a lot of moving parts, and we're hoping to get really down the road here and get this thing off track here soon. So things are looking good.
Good. Well, tell us really what all about Warrior to Citizen and how you reach out to people and the programs you offer. It looks like your website very extensive.
It is. It's very extensive. Well, let's start out with a little background information.
Please.
You know, Afghanistan is in Iraq, OIF, OEF. Those are two kind of different wars than we've experienced, you know, in the past. We've got the advent of the suicide bombers and IEDs as the primary weapons there. So you have different challenges. We have extended dwell time. The units are they're on station a lot longer. They have a lot more deployments. So you see a lot of family issues come up more. You have more incidences of PTSD because there's additional deployments. You have, you know, TBI, obviously, if you get blown up in a track vehicle or any kind of vehicle, really, then obviously you're going to experience some effects from that.
Yep,
and,
sure.
And that's what we're seeing. And one more thing, too, it's important to note is the life-saving techniques and the technology in the medical field have advanced so far that used to be, you know, things that would you weren't survive on the battlefield from back in even just a few years ago. They survive. Now, the long-term outcomes are obviously, they're, you know, sometimes...
Challenging.
To put it the least. So, so all these new things brought about an increased incidence of, you know, we saw unemployment, divorce, suicide rates are high, homelessness, and all of these things that are bad. And there's 350,000 active guard national troops leave active duty each year.
Wow.
22 suicides are committed daily among armed services personnel, and you see that all over the news.
22.
And that obviously that number could fluctuate. Depression, and the estimated conservative estimated cost that it cost $6.2 billion in the 2 years following the deployment, and that's in lost productivity and other things. So that's a lot of cost to our communities and to our families that, you know, there needs to be a fix for it. And the divorce rates among those from two deployments is 80%. Think about 80, that.
80% of personnel
if
deployed
you've been on
twice.
Two deployments.
You have are headed for divorce.
You're headed for. You're four times more likely to be unemployed, and there are more veterans in the criminal justice system on parole, in jail, or prison than there are troops deployed to combat.
Oh, no.
So that's and even among first marriages, among combat veterans, are 62% more likely to end in divorce than those of civilian counterparts.
So a lot of stress. When you talk about four or five deployments, over a span of 6, 7 years, 8 years, that's incredible. In a year at a time. I mean, in the Vietnam era, we did one tour, and that was pretty much enough for most of us. But I've got friends that did two or even three tours, But now, this is what these kids are going through, I shouldn't say kids, but because they are warriors, but they look like kids to me, right?
Well, it's a cumulative effect too. It's not just the one shot. If you're deployed and say you come back, say you do a 9 month or a year tour, and they're trying to, DOD has recognized that and they're trying to shorten them. But say you do that and you're back home for 6 months, a year, and it's not extreme case. Sometimes as quick as a, 3rd Infantry Division deployed many times.
Yep.
And 48th Brigade, Georgia National Guard, they're talking about going back again. And I don't know if that's, these are things change, but the dwell time back home is, you don't have really time to get to know each other. So
yeah. Well, and we had Ted Daywell on a couple of weeks ago in Vet Jobs, and he said that the unemployment rate in National Guard was incredibly high of that very factor.
So.
You come back for 6 months and, you got a civilian job, how are you going to keep that?
Well, General Butterworth and I think Charlene Anderson, some of those, they're really working on that problem, and they've got some good ideas, so and every bit helps, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so that history is important to realize. So a few years back, John Owings, he's a retired colonel and chaplain.
Chaplain, yeah.
82nd Airborne, he retired from the Georgia National Guard.
Okay.
And so there's a program called Strong Bonds that the National Guard Bureau adopted, and it's a weekend retreat, basically, and it's holistic. It talks through the mind, body, and spirit, and it's family-oriented, and it gives people that have deployed a chance to get back together, get to know each other, and go through some things where if they're back in the hustle-bustle of their everyday jobs, and they're not going to have time to get reacquainted and things. So this program had a tremendous success here in Georgia, and as a matter of fact, the suicide rate, we went several years without experiencing a single military-related suicide.
In Georgia.
So based on Georgia National Guard now, that probably doesn't include some of the other active component. But so obviously the empirical data there, this program works. So John Owings developed a POI with Mike Roberts of Warrior to Citizen. Mike is a CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And they got with the Georgia Tech Research Institute and Georgia State. They did some extensive background surveys and interviews with soldiers from the Georgia Guard that had returned. They said, if you had a program where you could reintegrate and to get back in, what would that look like? Mm-hmm. So they sit down and they over a period of, it's been going about 3 years now, they developed a very extensive POI with the psychologist, psychiatrist, all the clinical people, the technical people, and with counselors, trained counselors. So it's all very evidence-based. It's not just theoretical or anecdotal. It's very evidence-based and measured. We have a good system of metrics. So Warrior to Citizen, they come up with a program called Warrior to Citizen.
Okay.
That's a 28-day reintegration program for families and warriors returning back, and it's four phases. The first one, safety, stability. Two is taking stock. Three is engaging in change, and four is reintegration and reconnecting there. And so each of them have that theme for that whole week. Well, the whole point of it is after this 28-day in-residence program with all of the very qualified staff and counselors on board there, and the instructors with a well-thought-out, very detailed POI. At the end of that 28 days, the family is readjusted to some degree. So first one is safety, stability. That whole week, they're working on just, getting to feel safe about, okay, I'm with people I can trust. We can talk about these things that experience the same thing. And just kind of get settled in, after being at Fort Stewart or wherever they were at. And then the second one's taking stock, kind of analyzing, okay, where are we as a family? Where am I at as an individual? Doing some assessments. And then number three is engaging in change. Okay, kind of looking ahead, you know, what are the challenges that are going to deal with us once we walk out of this 28-day program, which is in residence, which is really good.
And
it's with
the family in residence?
The family comes in on Friday and stays through the weekend. So they're four days without the family.
Okay.
And then the other 3 days are with the family and the veteran.
Okay.
So you get some individual issues worked out, and then you bring the family in.
Yep.
So it's very holistic in nature and comprehensive. And another great thing about Warrior to Citizen is it is proactive. It's preventative in measure, as opposed to just waiting until something bad happens and then going and trying to fix it, right? And then so week two is taking stock, doing these assessments. Week three is engaging in change, where we look out and say, okay, what are the next hurdles once we leave here in this kind of environment with all of this help? What's that going to look like? And then the four is reconnecting and reintegration, where the family, okay, we set up some long-term goals and we decide where we're going to go as a family, you know, knowing that there's still issues out there.
Sure.
But then the great thing about Warrior to Citizen is after the 28-day in-residence program, we don't just leave them out there. We have an 11-month structured program where we follow up, and we have this entire integrated network of these same people that they already know and have gained the trust of. So if an issue comes up, if they're feeling suicidal ideations or something like that, then they have somebody that knows them, that knows what to do, and they're at an instant notice. They're there. They're there for them.
Let's go back to how do veterans or how do people coming out of the service, active duty, whatever, returning, how do they learn about Warrior to Citizen, and then is there a qualification program of some kind that, you know, because not everybody gets a chance to go through this.
Well, that's a great question, and I'm glad you asked that, Bill. Actually, we're looking to do our first pilot program soon.
Okay.
In September, and I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but we're doing some fundraising to raise the funds, because, you know, with all the sequestering and everything, the military funds are somewhat everybody recognizes there's a need for all of these programs and their reintegration and turning back in and how much it costs. But when it comes time to put money toward the problem, then that's a little more problematic. So we're looking for a pilot program in Jamonville, Pennsylvania, in the fall time frame of about 70 individuals. And that'll be now the works for this with Georgia Tech Research Institute and with Georgia State has been in the works, like we said, for about 3 years now. So they have tweaked the POI, the program of instruction, and tested it. And obviously, after the pilot program, we'll know exactly where we need to adjust. But
we're looking.
But as far as getting the word out, what we're trying to do right now is anywhere we can talk about it. Hey, there's a tremendous need for this, and it is a pilot program, but it is based on that regional care triage model, and the empirical data from Strong Bonds is clearly conclusive with the Georgia Guard that it's very successful, and it definitely made a difference in a lot of people's lives, and that was just for that short version.
Yep. Yeah.
So, and 28 days sounds like a long time, but if you look at all the issues that come up and everything, and the family, how long they've been apart, and all the things you have to go through, I mean, it's not that long, really.
No. When ETS, when you're 28 days is only long if you're counting down ETS, right?
That's right. So, or if you're sitting at Bagram Airfield with your bag waiting on your flight to come in, you get another bottle of water and wait, you can
get through. But
that's right.
Well, you know, so good point there. I want to talk about Pennsylvania and versus Georgia, because does that mean you're going nationwide, or I mean, you're planned? I would hope that this goes nationwide.
Absolutely. Based on the pilot program, we're looking to expand nationally, and with as many veterans as we can get, with the eventual throughput would be 1,000 per year.
Okay.
or more, you know, based on the funding we were able to raise and everything. And it'll probably end up being some combination of private funding as well as government funding.
Okay.
So
okay. Private funding, because you are a nonprofit.
So. We are a nonprofit, 501c3. Yep. And you may have heard of a guy named Rocky Blyer. You say, why are we in Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
And the thing is, Rocky, obviously being a veteran himself.
Vietnam vet, wounded.
Vietnam wounded and a football player.
Yep.
And I'm just going to say it, and if Rocky's listening, he does radio himself. If he's listening, he is a rock star up there. Okay, so when we went up to visit and looked around some foundations and things, I mean, everybody stops and looks and asks for, you know, an autograph and stuff. So he is so behind it and everything, and so we visited several foundations who expressed great interest in it, and we're working on those now to raise the funds for the pilot.
Yeah, because it has to cost quite a bit of money to do this, to have the veterans and their families involved and all that.
Yeah. You
know? But it's certainly worthwhile, but costly.
Right. You have to hire. There's a lot of components, but, you know, a lot of volunteer work, the things are done by volunteers, but a lot of the clinical technical specialists, and we have to hire those, you know, and pay for those. And then the biggest part of the expense is the room and board. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously just having somebody at a location costs a lot of money. So that's probably three-fourths of the cost, about 75%.
Okay. You give them a place to live three squares and all that.
Yeah,
right?
Just
re-upping, right?
Yeah, and a hot cookie in the morning and some coffee. You don't want them to feel like they're, you don't want to be in a harsh, he just left Afghanistan, and you don't want to come back and
metal plates.
Have them standing, you know, pray to rest when they come in and stuff. So,
go through the monkey bars before they meet.
So, and it's not all, you know, we're looking at, several locations, but it's not lavish, but we want it to be comfortable to where they're not focusing on where they're staying. They're mm-hmm. focusing on the task at hand and the classes they're receiving and the bonding and back with their families and things, so they can really focus on the healing process and the moral injury that occurs during war.
Yep. So and giving them a path to go forward with, almost a plan, I would assume, right?
It is. Literally they leave there, especially, you know, in the in taking stock. All of this is every phase of it is measured. We have the metrics for that, and they get very, very detailed. We have the metrics, and they leave there with a blueprint, a plan for, based on my specific circumstances, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, TBI or PTSD or PTSI, mm-hmm. now they call it, post-traumatic stress injury as opposed to disorder.
Disorder,
you know,
okay.
Kind of a different touch on it there. But
But
yeah, every phase they leave there with a way ahead, a way for the future, and the great thing about it is that for the 11 months following the 28-day residence phase, they have that reach back instant.
No matter where they're from,
exactly.
So
no matter
pick up the phone.
They pick up the phone and it will be answered, and the person that picks it up won't be somebody just trying to get to know you. It'll be somebody that knows your history, knows those issues, and is ready to help you.
Okay.
And that's very important.
Very ambitious, because, you said 350,000 people leave, you know, active duty in some fashion every year.
Right.
Now, how many of those are candidates, would you say, for the program?
All of them. You don't have to have any, serious issues to participate. It would help any family. That's the way it's structured. It would help a family that was, if there are normal families, it would.
If there are, yeah,
if there
that's
are.
Right. Only on TV.
Yeah, but they say, you know, the estimates are, the VA estimate is that 80% of the returning veterans from OIF, OEF have some form of PTSI.
Yeah.
Or PTS, you know, the injury. So.
Yeah.
That was staggering to me. And a lot of those are not diagnosed right away. They manifest later in either events, actions that happen, and usually they're not good for either the family or the community. So
Well, I mean, I've heard cases where it's even years after, you know, manifest, you know, many years after your return. So, you know, people can keep a lot of things bottled up.
Absolutely. And it's tied closely, you know, you were talking about earlier the vet jobs. It's tied closely to, you know, unemployment. These issues are interrelated. So a lot of times if you're unemployed, there's other issues.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I want to, you know, obviously people are going to say, well, you know, you've got the Department of Defense and the military transition programs and you've got the VA. And I mean, I think I've got, I understand, you know, what limitations, but why don't you give us some more detail on where they end up and where W2C will take over?
Well, our plan is that this is it's not a government program.
Right.
There's
right.
enough of those out there, and the one of the things that we've seen is they're reactive versus proactive. Yeah. They're just not that effective, and they don't address the holistic nature of the moral injury and the family issues. They don't involve the family, or if they do, it's in a Band-Aid kind of way. So what Warrior to Citizen does, through the holistic nature and its measurements and its empirical data, is it will, in a very strong, powerful kind of way, it will change these families in that period of time, and it will set them on a course, not that there won't be issues still, it'll set them on a course for success. Now, having said that, we are also the Pennsylvania National Guard is interested in doing in the pilot also, so in providing warriors to that. And so we have some negotiations and discussions with them about the Warrior to Citizen also.
Okay. The so what you're really saying is that the VA is there for its own purposes or pretty well-defined purposes, not to and the transition programs are really just more geared for employment rather than truly adjusting, right?
Yeah, I think we see with all the backlog of the VA cases, if you call, of course, they have a hotline, and the VA is trying really hard to do the right thing and everything, but I think they're just swamped. Truthfully, they're just inundated with more work than, and a lot of these issues, you know, have second and third order effects that aren't easily dealt with or not apparent at first. So a lot of times when a warrior comes in, you know, a lot of them just, they just won't go to the VA because sometimes an appointment might be hard to get or something.
Yeah, well, and you got to sit there forever. And again, yeah, they're doing the best they can.
They
but,
are,
you know,
yeah, they are.
But it's just a cheap shot.
You know, if you just do the math and see how many, if you're in here, and that's never mind, you still have all the Vietnam issues and Agent Orange and all of those things and the other intercessory periods there. And then, but like we talked about, the changing nature of warfare has really added to the moral injury that soldiers experience, and especially with repeated deployments. And in some ways you consider that cumulative, you know, because it adds up on you, and certainly the family. I mean, with those kind of numbers, it's just very tough on a family. One deployment stuff, I just deployment myself, and it was, that's plenty. I can't fathom some of these young guys that do, you know, four or five.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just, my hat's off to them. Well, God bless them, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've been part of the, I mean, volunteered down at the USO at Hartsfield, and, you know, welcome them, and I just, you know, man, it's it's something very impressive. I mean, I'm so impressed though with the young people that are in the military today. It's just, you know, just outstanding people. You know,
well, so. I heard a thing the other day. You know, certainly my dad, World War II veteran, and I consider them the greatest generation. But that someone quoted the other day, and they said they thought maybe this, in some ways, was a greatest generation too. You know, in their own kind of way.
Yeah,
especially. You know, you look at the length of World War II was 4 years.
Yeah.
And we're already in years in Afghanistan and growing.
Yep.
So it's
well, and you know, it's not like you said, there's no front lines necessarily. You can drive down the same road, what, six, seven, eight, 9 months in a row every day, never have a problem, and all of a sudden, bang, one day, not bang, but
right,
really
right.
big boom
right, right.
one day, and you know,
right.
everything changes.
Right.
So,
But Bill, I have one thing there
yeah,
that you asked about as far as we are looking for volunteers,
yeah.
and we're trying to raise money, financial support, and all of that money will go for a great cause, and we recognize about sequestration, and there's a lot of government programs out there, so we're looking to do it in the private sector as much as possible and with volunteers, but there is a certain amount of funding you have to have for these paid clinical
sure.
staff and the room and board, you know, unless and I don't think anybody wants to charge the
no.
ones that are undergoing that would kind of that might dampen our
might
participation.
Yeah. A little self-defeating, yeah.
So if you have volunteers or anybody, yep. and we'd certainly like to talk with them and sit down with them in the program and any years that could help us in any capacity that they may have.
Well, locally, I mean, this show is on the internet, you know, so it's going, you know, throughout the solar system. But locally here in Atlanta, I don't remember having you guys speak at any of the Atlanta Vietnam Vet. Absolutely,
we need to do that for sure. I attended one of those meetings a couple of years ago, and I was really surprised it was how well
old
attended.
We all were.
Yeah.
yeah.
I didn't. Actually, there were.
I look around. What are all these old guys doing here?
You know, they have a good lunch too. But yeah. the thing about it,
those that can stay awake.
Yeah, that's right. It's amazing how many were. You know, a lot of these groups that meet. You yep. know, there's not that many, but there must have been 250 people in
yeah.
there. I
yep.
mean, it was very well attended. So we'd love an opportunity to talk at that or any other forum that is available.
I think I can help with that.
That would be great.
We'll see what we can do. Well, what about we had Joe Rangich on, who's a West Pointer and 20-some years retired, you know, went from enlisted to West Point and then career as an officer. But he's working with a group on the south side of town, around Noonan, and particularly with women veterans and PTSD. And I sent him a note this morning, you know, finally connected that he ought to be aware of this. So
yeah.
I sent him a note to make sure he, you know, tried to listen in today. But I want to put the two of you guys, you know, you folks together.
Oh, that would be great. Yes.
Because they're working on some things. And it sounds like, I mean, they're trying to build a facility down there to help. But they're focusing strictly on women veterans, because I guess the suicide rate is even higher am I right there, among female soldiers or
you know, Bill, I'm going to be honest. I do not know the answer to that.
Okay. Well, that's all right.
I'm not sure about that.
Well,
but I do know that. It's like we're talking every day. I mean, how do you put the cost of one life?
Well, yeah.
You
one
know,
is too many. Yeah.
One is too many. And, you know, even one is more than we would like to experience. And so I think we're looking at $1.5 million for the pilot program.
Okay.
And I certainly consider someone's life more than that, especially someone that served their country so well and everything. So
absolutely.
It's
Well, you know, and it's very interesting. I'm going back to Ted DeWalt's program where he said we've now had two generations without a draft, you know, and so the percentage of the population that actually does serve is much smaller than it was 40 years ago, you know, I think we miss a lot by doing that, you know, by not having more participation in some kind of, you don't have to be military, but some kind of service, you know, that everybody should be required to be a part of.
Well, absolutely. And anytime you involve, if you have to go somewhere, obviously,
yep.
then the numbers, you've been drafted, you go, you get different people than if it's an all-volunteer.
Yes, you
army.
Do.
And you get a better cross-section because obviously not everybody wants to be in the military. I was one of those that I knew right away I was going to be, but not everybody's like that, found out, you know.
Yep.
And we have fewer and fewer people in Congress that have served in
yes.
the military. And so in general, the numbers are down of people that understand what that deployment process is about and what those people go through, you know. So it's
And you have, I think you also have in today's service a lot of married couples. So, you know, you got maybe one deployed and one at home, with kids, or you know, and the chance that both parents could be deployed at the same time, I would think.
I know we were several cases in Afghanistan. You know, the spouses were both in theater.
Wow.
So,
wow.
I don't know who was watching the children, but and obviously wow. family or somebody. But yeah. That happens too. It's a very very real issue. And then you combine that, and then they all go back, and then
just the stress of being away, like both away, and then coming back. Yeah,
it's just incredible. I can't imagine. You know, it's bad enough just having one person and then coming back to integrate.
Yeah, you mentioned World War II, and you know we all see the old newsreels and black and white films and from those days, but that war had an end. You know, and it was clear, you know, and then the troops, you know, had a chance to kind of decompress, you know, after combat ended, and then they worked their way home, and then they came home on a ship, you know, and so several more days, you know, so they were kind of gone through a transition, you know, in that process. Today, you get on a jet and, if you know, in less than 24 hours, you're...
I was down at Fort Stewart when I got back, and they were having this family event. And so I just kind of walked in and, you know, see what was going on. And there was a line out, and I said, well, here, I'll jump in and help, you know. And then I got to talking to somebody and says, well, yeah, when were you in Afghanistan? So I said, well, about yesterday. So, yeah, it's changed a lot. And then we have the instantaneous communication, you know, the internet, the web and phones, satellite phones and everything. So, it's better in some ways. Like in Vietnam, you get a letter in a month or something.
Yeah, well, and once in a while you could patch on a field phone through a shortwave guy on the West Coast, and I did that once.
Absolutely. But
that's crazy.
Bill, one of the key things we feel really strongly, and we have the empirical evidence that warrior to citizen will make a difference. And if we can get our pilot program off the ground, and we can raise the money we need to do that, I know we will see great things, and we'll have the metrics and everything moving forward, and we can adjust the program ever how we need to do that, you know,
to make it effective. Mm-hmm. Well, let's the suicide rate is just unacceptable. So can we give some people warning signs about suicide warning signs, if somebody is looking like they might.
They
might be headed that way.
Well, you know, a lot of times you talk about wanting to hurt or kill theirself.
Yeah.
And the old thing you should always take them serious if they bring that up, you know, because we have a little card. It's called an ACE card in the Army that points out some of the symptoms.
Okay.
Another one's trying to get pills, guns, or other ways to harm yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in the military, a lot of people have guns.
Yeah.
Continuously talking or writing about death, dying, or suicide.
Okay.
Hopelessness, like if you have somebody that it was usually bouncing around, and then the next thing you know, they're very hopeless.
Just
down in the dumps, yeah. And then rage or uncontrolled anger, seeking revenge type, acting out things like that. Mm-hmm. That could be an indicator. Acting in a reckless or risky way. And of course, in Atlanta, that's...
Kids driving on 285.
285. another one, you know, is, you know, giving away things that's, you know, precious to you sometimes. You see people, they give it, and you're like, why would they give away their... that's one of their prized possessions, you know. Feeling trapped, like there's no way out, or saying or feeling that there's no longer any reason for them to live. And that's especially, you know, like when they have a family there. So obviously they're really dealing with some issues there that are very, very deeply rooted and hard to deal with, you know. So that's just a few. And obviously there's more, and sometimes they don't say or do anything. They just go and do it.
Yeah.
And that's the sad thing. But there are the signs if you're looking for that.
For it.
That's right.
Well, how can... this is just a wonderful, you know, program you guys are launching here. But if our listeners are out there and they want to get involved, or they want to get involved in the program, or they want to address or maybe get themselves get some help, or they've got a veteran they're concerned about that needs some help? How can they get a hold of you and or Warrior to Citizen? What's the best way?
Well, the good thing is we're located very close by. We're at Perimeter Park Drive, Suite 100. Our phone number is 800-958-4650. That's the office. We're on the web. We're www.warrior, spelled out, warrior2citizen, citizen.org.
Dot org?
Yes, sir. Okay. O-R-G.
Okay.
And let me give you that number one more time, 800-958-4650. I'm hoping the board's lighting up over there and volunteers are calling.
Well, you know, we're gonna give you a copy of this file so you can use it as well. But because that 800 number is important, because again, this is going to go all over the country, and
great.
You know, people wherever they are should be able to call that number and either get some help or offer to help. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. And Bill, you know, the thing about this is we're. And I appreciate any forum that we can use to help spread the word and everything, because it's really going good, and the program is just wonderful, and the results will bear that out once we get this pilot program done.
Well, I mean, it seems like you've done an awful lot of work already, and getting prepared. Now we need to get it off the launching pad, right?
Absolutely. The sooner the better. And, you know, the fall is going to roll around before we know it here. So we've still got a lot of work to do. But we get up every day. I know Mike Roberts and Carol LaBranch and several others. I mean, they just Ted Fricky, they're all volunteer their time and their treasure. They don't, you know, make any money off of it. It's all a passion, and they work so hard at it. And we know it's going to succeed because of that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And whatever we can, you know, to help promote it, and we'll certainly do that. And if Rocky Blyer is listening, you know, I think he ought to be on our show one of these days. You know, so
we'll have to run that by him. He has a radio show. He has a financial services company in Pittsburgh, and he has a show once a week. So he very well might do. We'll ask him.
Well, that'd be great. That would be great. Well, you know, we close our program. Is there more you'd like to add before we wrap up?
I think we've covered everything, Bill. Yeah.
Okay. And they can get you again at 800-958-4650 or www.warrior2citizen.org.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I got to make sure I change that. All right. Great. Well, we close by actually quoting one of Rocky Blyer's interests. He is part of the National Veteran-Owned Business Association, and they produce a magazine called Vetrepreneur. And they define a vetrepreneur as a military veteran who organizes and manages a business. And our mission at From Boots to Biz Radio is to help more veterans become business owners by education and information, encouraging more entrepreneurship. So whatever we can do in that regard, we're ready to help people. So, this is Bill Williams and From Boots to Biz Radio, and Dennis Brown has been my guest, and Warrior to Citizen is our featured organization today. Until next week, carry on.